Hey, everybody. Happy Sunday. My conversation with Pastor Jeff from Brave Church in Denver, Colorado. We talk about a lot of different topics. Advertiser free, brought to you by Turning Point USA Faith, Turning Point Faith. And also thanks to Brave Church. 3,000 plus people were in the audience for this conversation. It was a lot of fun, really enjoyable. And text this conversation to your friends. If you want to email us your thoughts, you could do so directly, freedom@charliekirk.com. And there are no advertisers on the show because of you, because of your support at charliekirk.com/support. Thank you so much, Amber, for your support. Thank you, Deanna, for your support. Thank you, Tamara, for your support. Richard, for your support. Robert, for your support. Kimberly, for your support. Marie, for your support. And Rebecca, for your support. charliekirk.com/support. That's charliekirk.com/support. Thank you for getting them behind the work we are doing. God bless you. God bless you. God bless you. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. It's Sunday. No advertisers. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
What a great event this is. I love Colorado. This is awesome. And I was just catching up with all my new friends about how I don't visit Colorado more often. So we're going to be coming back and doing all sorts of things. And last night we had an amazing event at a church in Denver. We had, I think, over 3,000 people there yesterday. It was unbelievable. And so I'm so excited to share this with you tonight. We have a lot to talk about. I just want to thank the organizers of this wonderful event. Grassroots politics is everything. If we're going to take back our country, it has to start from the bottom up, not the top down. So I just want to thank the organizers of this event that have done a phenomenal job. So there's a lot I want to talk about tonight. I actually have some really good news to share. So I'm going to be a different type of speaker than most at Republican gatherings where they just kind of go through a long list of everything wrong of what's happening in the country. And then they say, well, there's nothing we could do about it. You know, goodbye. I actually have some really good news to share tonight. And I want to talk about why and then what you can do about it to kind of accelerate that trend. I'm traveling the country right now. We're on campus tour. We went to University of Michigan, University of Minnesota, Baylor University, just spoke at University of Oregon, which was quite an experience. Spoke at University of Vermont, which was also something. And we're going to University of Alabama and Clemson later this week. And then we go to University of Arizona after that. We give over 330 speeches a year. We're really in touch with the grassroots and kind of what's happening in the country, in addition to our podcasts and radio that we're doing. And I could tell you that as we're traveling the country, I'll tell you kind of what happened at University of Oregon. It was really interesting. That was a couple days ago. I can't remember what day it is as much as we're traveling. Five different venues canceled us when we were at University of Oregon. Five venues when we tried to do our event. And, you know, up against Antifa and all the left-wing activists that continually were coming up to Turning Point USA, and we were not even allowing us to host the event. And our staff is pretty incredible. I want to also point out all of our Turning Point USA students. Raise your hand if you're here, if you're part with Turning Point USA. They got to give you better seats, I got to tell you. I mean, come on. But they're all the way out there in basically Boulder out there. Thank you guys for being here. And Colorado State Chapter, is that right? Is that who's here tonight? You guys do a wonderful job, so thank you. And finally, we got our sixth venue in Eugene, Oregon, after five of them were canceled. And that's just a little bit of a microcosm what we're dealing with, which is we're dealing with a leftist movement, a collectivist movement. It's not about disagreement. The state of affairs right now in our country is not the country many of you grew up in. That country is dead. Don't worry, the news gets better from that point forward. But when you try to do an event in Eugene, Oregon, and you have Antifa going around threatening maids and chefs and people that work at the hotels personally and following them home because we want to come talk about American exceptionalism, that should just take pause and say, wait a second, what country are we exactly living in? And so one thing that gives me hope is that I'm now seeing a conservative movement that understands the stakes of the game in front of us. I'm now seeing a conservative movement that understands we're not in some sort of long-form Socratic dialogue in a coffee shop of two sides that want exactly the same thing. And so I'm going to say a couple things tonight that will be in violation of establishment Republican orthodoxy. and you guys can decide if you agree or disagree and want to have me back ever again. And so one of them is this, is that the moderates that run the Republican Party, many of which are gutless wonders, and they say, so I guess you agree with that. They say, we want the same thing that the Democrats want. We just have a different way of getting there. I'm sure all of you have heard this before, right? We all want the same thing. We just have a different kind of navigational path. Nothing could be further from the truth. We want to go north. They want to go south. We believe only women can get pregnant. They believe men can become pregnant. Let's just stop there. Where's the negotiating space there? Where's the middle ground? They believe the Constitution is a barrier to their power grab. We believe the Constitution is the greatest political document ever written. They want to tear down Mount Rushmore. We want to teach our children about Mount Rushmore. They think a million abortions a year is just fine. They want to increase that number. We believe a million abortions a year is a moral stain on our country and that we need to fight for life, especially the people that can't fight for themselves. They want a completely different America than we do. We don't believe we should shut down our country for a virus that has a 99.5% survival rate, nor do we believe that we should vaccinate 5 to 11-year-olds for a virus that has an almost immeasurable rate to kill these young children. And so what we need to start to recognize and realize is then people say, well, Charlie, why can't the country come together? Right? I hear this all the time. Charlie, we're so divided. Everything is one side or the other. And I say, it's about time we know where everyone stands. It's about time we have some clarity. I would much rather have clarity of what the left in this country believes and stands for and what we believe and stand for than this false moderation that has been plaguing our country for 40 years. And let me be very clear what I mean by that, is that for so long, we have had this kind of mindset in the Republican Party where we need to sue for peace and we need to go to the middle and they get everything they want, right? And instead, what we always should have been doing is we should have been dismissing them from the beginning. Say, wait a second, I reject the premise that somehow we need, you know, activist people on the courts or that the Second Amendment is null and void. And so some of this is temperamental. Republicans, we tend to be kind of more, we try to build bridges. We try to find the other side. We're the only ones, by the way, that care about freedom of speech. You understand that. We're the only ones. They sit around and they're thinking, how can we shut you up? We're the ones saying, how can we actually liberate the conversation? And so what I'm seeing, and this is a really good thing, and I don't see this from the politicians, by the way, in D.C. Most politicians we send to D.C., complete and total waste of time, right? And most of them say one thing, they do another, and they betray you, by the way. They take advantage of you, and they send the same mailer over and over again, and they say, I'm pro-life, send me to D.C. And meanwhile, they go and cut deals with Nancy Pelosi for bipartisan infrastructure packages in the middle of the night. And meanwhile, if you kind of look at the trend, it's, oh, wow, we as Republicans have been winning elections, maybe not in Colorado, but we've been losing our country. And what I'm seeing is a new mindset coming to conservatives. And I want to really put this into focus, is all of a sudden that they are not going to stop until we realize this is no longer a debate and a discussion. This is a power play. It's that simple. And so what we have is we have a regime in charge of, I could summarize it very simply. Okay, let's go, Brandon. That's all I have to say. And right. Let's go, Brandon. Let's go, Brandon. And what I love about what this reporter, I actually want to thank the reporter that did this. She gave us a PG version to, it's the ultimate translator of an expletive-filled rant into a way that we can now say it in churches, right, Pastor? We can say it everywhere, right? We want the young man Brandon to win. See, I see a Let's Go Brandon shirt right there. And so, but this is a really important thing, which is the regime in charge, this tells you everything you need to know about them. The southern border is wide open. We'll get to that in a second. Inflation is kicking in. We gave $85 billion of weapons to the Taliban. Are you kidding me? We're letting China do whatever they want. And usually when poll numbers go down, usually a president has like a timeout, like a cooling off period, right? They'll do like Kids with Cancer Day, or like they'll bring in the Olympic athletes. This regime is accelerating their unpopular, sinister, anti-American policies. And we need to ask ourselves the question, why? Well, I don't have any like super insight into this, but it's rather obvious. They have no plan to ever run Joe Biden for the presidency again. It's that simple. And excuse this kind of graphic analogy, but this is a kamikaze presidency. Is that they are now looking at Joe Biden as the intermediary step to turn the page on the American way of life and usher in a globalist open border and a completely different way of governing the country. That he is given the opportunity to do something that Obama never did. He can govern as harshly and as radically as he chooses without ever worrying about plummeting poll numbers. He's going to do what he wants regardless of what the founding fathers gave us as the ultimate check and balance, elections. He does not care. Now, that's not to say there's no way to hold them accountable. We'll get to that in a second. But instead, the normal ways to get a president's attention, like a 32% approval rating in certain states. What is Joe Biden's approval rating here? 40%, more or less? I know what you're thinking. Who are those 40% people? Like, what are they looking at? What news are they consuming? What exactly are they enjoying that they're seeing? The 30% increase in murder rates? The fact that you can't build supplies? But I have some good news, everybody. Joe Biden finally got a boat parade off of Long Beach, California. He finally got a boat parade, and he's been waiting for it for a long time. You see, that joke works better in Florida because they have boat parades. I don't know if you guys have boat parades here, but you do. You have plenty of boat parades. That's good. For some people, it just goes right over their head. The point is this, is that we now need to employ different tactics and measures to hold this regime accountable and to take back the country. So let me tell you, it's a lot of things I want to talk about. Let me tell you the most important news story in the last 6 weeks. The most important news story in the last 6 weeks was not that Fauci lied in front of Congress. By the way, Fauci should be in prison for what he has done to our country. He should be locked up for what he has done to our country. He lied to Congress under oath on May 11th, not to mention how he has manufactured what I believe is one of the greatest injustices in American society in my lifetime. One of the greatest injustices is the fact that you are not even allowed to discuss or open your mouth, even mention ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, aspirin. And I tell you, and by the way, people have opinions on the vaccine. That's fine. I'm not getting vaccinated. You guys can make your own decisions as you see fit, whatever. And the fact that leave it up to the Republican Party to like mess up the easiest opportunity to win over black voters, right? So here you have 55% of blacks that don't want to get vaccinated. And the Republicans are the ones that are like, huh, maybe we should go do a press release at how wonderful the vaccine. I'm like, you have a wonderful opportunity. Anyway, that's typical Republican Party stuff, right? And so anyway, we have the one of the great injustices concocted by Fauci and that whole cartel of criminals running NIH and CDC was a clampdown on alternative measures, a pandemic of the untreated, not a pandemic of the unvaccinated, but a pandemic of not able to have early treatments. And so, but that's not even the biggest story. The biggest story in America was something that happened over a course of a couple days when the National School Board Association of America wrote a letter on a Friday evening equating parents that are showing up and complaining at school board meetings as domestic terrorists. The National School Board Association of America with 25 footnotes. Now, we do 3 hours of radio a day. We do two podcasts a day. I actually read the letter, something that the Attorney General of the United States actually did not care to do. When you read the letter, the 25 footnotes about the rising increase in violence against school board members, 20 out of 25 were prank calls, harassment, and school board members feeling uncomfortable because so many moms and dads were showing up to the meeting. The Nazi salute that they said was part of the National School Board Association letter was a Nazi salute done to mock the school board members, saying that you guys are Nazis against our children because you want to mask them. Not a pro-Nazi thing. The four remaining things, as they say, was violence against school board members. One of them I'll get to in a second was a father showing up for disorderly conduct at Loudoun County school boards. We'll get to there because that's a very important thing. And the three other ones were disagreements in parking lots between other parents. So the National School Board Association, and by the way, oh yeah, the 26th one was Turning Point USA School Board Watch List. I was so proud to see that. It was a crowning achievement. We made it, everybody. The Federal Bureau of Investigation thinks we're a problem. It's a beautiful thing. When I saw that, I told my team, you could have Monday off. You've done it. You have officially done something so incredibly effective that the other side needs to use the Patriot Act against us. It's phenomenal. And no, it's true. Turning Point USA School Board Watch List, causing harm against school board members. Yeah, right, sure. Because we're publicizing what these maniacs are doing to your children, and they're masking them, white privilege, critical race theory, diversity, equity, inclusion, lockdowns, vaccine mandates, and transgender bathrooms. We'll get to that in a second. Somehow we're the problem. Again, we're not fazed by that. It's part of what we do. But then the amazing thing, the most important news story, 4 days later, when the Department of Justice and that craven old man who calls himself an attorney general, Merrick Garland, who's a sinister human being. I mean, this guy, imagine how bottom of the barrel you have to be when murders are up 30%, when you have law. I mean, you guys see crime in Colorado. It is going through the roof, especially in the Denver suburbs, to all of a sudden say, you know what? I'm going to go issue a memo. He writes a letter ordering the FBI, the DOJ, and the DHS to have a coalition to come together to go spy on you and you and you and you because you complain at school board meetings, to go use police power and the shock troops against all of you. And what was so amazing as this unfolded was a couple things. First of all, there's a reason why they did that. They did that because the Democrat consultants who are actually worth, you know, anything, they pulled a fire alarm. And they said, we are going to lose Virginia if we don't keep these moms and dads at home. Now, instead of actually, I don't know, improving our schools and doing what they're supposed to do, what's the default position of the Democrat Party? Let's go send the FBI after them, right? Same thing they did with Trump, right? When they entrapped Michael Flynn and they entrapped his entire team. And what happened in the days after should give every single one of you hope, is that for the first time in the 10 years I've been doing this, the conservative grassroots across America, they said, oh, Merrick Garland, you say I can't show up. I'm now going to bring 10 friends. And the school board meetings had more people than ever before showed up all across the country. And so Tuesday's a big day. A lot of you think Colorado is a deep blue state. A lot of you say, we can't win this back. Let's take a pause. Let's talk about another deep blue state with very similar demographics of income and just kind of political perspectives, and that's Virginia. Virginia, I would have said a year ago, has a far less likelihood of ever turning into a red state versus Colorado. If I had to place a bet, I would say Virginia, no way. The wealthiest counties in America are the suburbs of Virginia. Loudoun County, Fairfax County. Now, you might say, well, what, you know, what products do they create in Northern Virginia? Nothing. It's the greatest scam of all time. They take your money as taxpayer money, they launder it back and hire themselves as lobbyists and defense contractors and pharmaceutical employees. And then they call themselves business people because they live outside of DC because they're close to the $4 trillion that our country takes from you every single year. Unlike you guys in Colorado, you actually build stuff here in this state. You have real businesses. So you guys earn your money, unlike, you know, the kingdom of Washington, D.C. that takes your money forcibly at gunpoint and then goes build. I don't ever been to Northern Virginia lately. I drove through Fairfax County. I mean, they have a Dolce and Gabbana store next to a Hermes store next. I mean, like you're talking about like the streets of Paris have moved in to Loudoun County, Virginia. And that should tell you everything you need to know about the state of affairs in our country, where the wealthiest counties in America used to be around Philadelphia, Chicago, and Detroit. And now the wealthiest counties are around Washington, D.C. Now, you guys have some of the wealthiest areas in America, too. Some of the most flourishing, economically productive areas in the entire country. And so it's very similar. Virginia seemed to be deep blue, not unable to be moved, no questions asked. Well, one of the fathers that was mentioned in the National School Board Association letter, he showed up in May. He showed up at a school board meeting. He had never showed up at a school board meeting before. He was just a regular dad, blue collar guy, middle class worker, earning $80,000 a year, just trying to do his job. But he showed up to that school board meeting for a reason. And he was, excuse my language, pissed. And you'll understand why I use that word in a second. He showed up at that school board meeting because his daughter was just raped in a bathroom by a man who called himself a woman because of transgender policy. And that's what they were debating that night at the Loudoun County schools. So he shows up and a transgender agitator gets in his face. He gets a little heated and they arrest him for disorderly conduct. Meanwhile, he keeps on screaming, my daughter was just raped. They're lying. My daughter was just raped. They're lying. They arrest him and get him out of the building. They have a whole conversation at the Loudoun County schools in Virginia around transgender bathrooms. This is late May, just a couple months ago. The superintendent of schools, this guy named Ziegler, who's a criminal who should be in prison, said, quote, we have no incidents of sexual assault to report. Transgender bathrooms are wonderful for tolerance and for equity and for inclusion. We are going to continue this. He lied under oath in front of the school board meeting, in front of all the parents after the father whose daughter was just raped. Then it gets worse. You might say, how could that get worse? So then the school board met privately and they moved the rapist to another school. And he raped again. Two young girls were sodomized in transgender bathrooms in Loudoun County schools and the school board covered it up. Now, Terry McAuliffe, who's running for governor of Virginia a couple weeks ago, said that parents should have no say in a child's education. Who are parents to say that you have a say in your child's education? Randy Weingarten, the head of the American Federation of Teachers, the second largest teacher union in the country alongside the National Education Association, came out and she said, quote, she said that parents think they have a say in children education. They're wrong. Front page of the Washington Post. Now, Democrats, this is one of the reasons why I think we're going to win, is that, you know, they start making gains with suburban women because they've been propagandized to hate Donald Trump. And the one thing they decide to all of a sudden screw up is, oh, you know what? You actually have no say in your kid's education. Just drop them off at the school and don't say anything. Well, I'm telling you right now, we don't know what's going to happen in Virginia. I'm not in the prediction business. And you better believe there'll be tomfoolery and shenanigans and all sorts of ballots going all over the place, right? But the latest poll shows Republican challenger up 8 points and then up 3 points. Virginia, deep blue state, everybody, is now a battleground state. And so now we need to ask ourselves the question, why? Youngkin was running the most boring campaign in the history of the planet until July. You guys know the type of Republican I'm talking about, right? Walking on eggshells, politically correct, Mitt Romney 2.0, right? Super boring, like, elect me because I am like the better job creator guy. And trust me, I'm not a racist. Please, please, please don't call me that. Like endless apology, like the lower property tax guy. By the way, I love the lower property tax thing. That's not going to motivate huge blocks. You know what motivates people? All of a sudden, Youngkin, when he was 12 points down in the polls in August, said, I'm going to ban critical race theory. I'm not going to have masks on our children anymore. I'm going to do a criminal investigation when I'm governor into the Loudoun County schools. And like that, the race started to change. People started to show up. And this right here shows that the Republican orthodoxy that we have been living under is a lie. It's like, don't offend your voters. Don't do anything too controversial. Instead, you have to find issues, wedge issues that we are good at. Here are some of them. Crime, homelessness, schools, children, like basic issues. And instead, we've kind of believed that, well, we have to just kind of run to the middle and win these moderates over. You go look at Youngkin's rallies. You have Democrats that are showing up that hated Donald Trump that are all of a sudden animated by this. Why? It's because you have a Republican that's finally been willing to talk about the issues that matter, to finally be able to say, these are the type of things we need to run on. So we'll see what happens Tuesday. But the most important issue, so then, but let me connect the two. The most important news story is how the regime, how seriously the regime took you guys showing up to school board meetings. This is the great threat to their power. Because this cuts through every other issue they've ever seen. This is a more powerful movement than the Tea Party movement. I lived through the Tea Party movement in 2010, right up close and personal. I cut my political teeth in the Tea Party movement. This is organic. It's authentic. It's robust. It doesn't really have a leader, so it's impossible to kind of take it out. And everyone is saying the same thing. I'm traveling the country. I was just in Seattle. I was in Boise. We were in Chicago. We were in New York. And this is happening organically, everybody, where all of a sudden people are saying, I'm going to take back the school board. I'm going to challenge them. I'm going to show up in record numbers. And it's amazing to see. And they know the political power of this type of movement. And they know that if this thing finds its kind of conclusive end, this thing can be a massive swing politically, especially in 2022. So let me talk about kind of what I think Republicans need to run on in 2022. Because I think that Republicans trying to take back the House, I think we're going to get it wrong. And here's my contribution to the conversation. That You have been lied to, and you know it. You've been lied to by Republicans and Democrats that say, all you have to do is take back the House and things will get better. We know that's not true, right? We know this is a 40-year to 50-year project, and we want to be told the truth by our politicians. So instead, why don't our politicians say, hey, we're going to promise you something we can actually do. So Republicans need to run on four major things. It's this simple. Number one, they can get this done. Day one of Republicans taking back the House, we will do a new commission and a special prosecutor in Anthony Fauci and NIH and CDC and tell you where this virus came from and China's involvement in creating the virus and gain of function research funded by our own government. That's number one, that we need to empower you and you and you to have the information to know what's happened. You want to say, Charlie, how do we take the country back? First, we have to prove to our fellow voters and countrymen how corrupt this actually is. I want the receipts, Anthony Fauci. How many times do you visit the Wuhan Institute of Virology? Not some sort of 5-minute thing where you testify under oath. No, I want a special commission. And this tells you everything you need to know about the Democrats. They have a special commission into January 6th. Yeah, they don't have a special commission as something that's killed 700,000 Americans. They don't have a special commission into our own government's funding of the virus, which the NIH was involved in gain of function research. We need a nonstop hearing blitz of every single deep state medical practitioner that was involved in every that changed all of your life. And I'm going to say something that's controversial, but this virus and our incredibly immature and imprudent reaction to it changed our country more than 9/11. I want you to think about that. It changed our economy. It changed our voting laws. It changed our children's education. We have a mental health crisis. We have a suicide epidemic on our hands. All because of something that our own government funded. Now, you see George W. Bush coming out with his recent foundation. He says, it doesn't matter where the virus came from, okay? It doesn't matter. Oh, it doesn't matter. Because they say, it doesn't matter if it's an act of God. Let me tell you why it matters. It's so unbelievably obvious. I don't even have to say it, but that it wasn't an act of God. It was our own government acting like God. It was our own government funding gain-of-function research and creating the virus itself. And then we have to say, what was China's government's involvement in that? And guess what? You're going to have to pay us a couple $1 trillion in reparations now, China, and no more buying up our farmland and no more dumping products in our country. And that ends now. You want to build grassroots momentum? We need information. Number two, that every Republican needs to run on in 2022 is they have to say, elect us and give us the House of Representatives back, and we are going to find out the truth of what happened in the 2020 election. We are going to get to the bottom of what happened in the 2020 election. From Mark Zuckerberg's $420 million to Facebook and Twitter not allowing the Hunter Biden story to be shared in the month of October, there needs to be a special commission report of all the different dynamics that were at play in the 2020 election. Now they say, man, there's no evidence. You notice this again? I do this for a living, so I don't expect everyone to notice. You notice how they said there's no evidence of fraud. Now there's no evidence of widespread fraud. Do you notice how they changed that? Now, why is that a big difference? Because Trump didn't lose widespread. He lost Arizona by 10,000 votes. He lost Georgia by 9,000 votes. He lost Pennsylvania by 60,000 votes. So widespread and fraud are two totally different things. So all of a sudden they now have new indictments in Wisconsin of people that go to nursing homes and turn in ballots fraudulently. We have evidence in Nevada of the Nevada Native Voting Project that fraudulently paid people for votes, not to mention how Georgia went from 248,000 mail-in ballots to 1.2 million mail-in ballots. Now, I'm going to say something that might be so totally unpopular, but you got to dream big. You guys got to get rid of mail-in voting here in Colorado. It's a total and complete disaster. It is a disaster. And not everyone agrees. They say, oh, Charlie, it's wonderful. It's safe and secure. You're being played. That's all I have to say. You are being played, everybody, okay? Every state that goes to mass mail-in voting is controlled by the Democrats within 6 to 8 years, okay? Oregon has done it. Washington has done it. Colorado was literally the blueprint for it. We need a special commission. We need answers on this. Number three, when Republicans take back the House of Representatives, we need a special commission, subpoenas. We need Mark Milley and Lloyd Austin under oath to find out who gave orders when to give $85 billion to the Taliban, give up Bagram Air Base, and give up what we did in Afghanistan over to our enemy. We need answers now, and people need to go to jail for what happened in Afghanistan. Now, you might see a common theme between all of this. We need people to run for Congress and not give you false hope. I'm tired of this. Send us and we're going to defeat socialism. You're not going to do that. You're not going to get rid of the FBI. You're not getting rid of the Department of Education. What you can do, though, is you can offer within 1 year of being in Congress the most conclusive, multi-topic report of how our government has been run by a group of private and public interests working against you, whether it be the virus, the lockdown, the vaccine, masks, Afghanistan, arming the Taliban, the 2020 election, and all of a sudden you start feeding this information. You want to build a grassroots movement where next time we can have 6,000 people in a room like this, show them how corrupt this actually is. Information, everybody. This is what the base needs more than anything else. Because guess what? It's not happening through our journalists, obviously. It's not happening through media, but Congress can do that, and Congress needs to do that. The fourth thing, if I had to have a fourth one on, is we need to know the extent and the detail, and all I have to say is Tucker Carlson has a big week coming up, to the extent and the detail of the federal government's involvement on January the 6th. We need to know exactly what happened, how involved they were. It's very, very important. But this will, here's what I'm afraid of. We're going to take back the House unless our voters are too cynical because they don't trust Republicans. It's that simple. How do we give those people the confidence to show up? When you say, look, I'm going to level with you. Day one, we're going to start to get answers that you deserve. We're going to start to do criminal referrals that you deserve on this. And what's so amazing is that these people have actually thought they would be infinitely untouchable. Fauci is not prepared for this, everybody. Now, Fauci, some of you might say, Charlie, you know, it's unfair to pick on Fauci. I don't know who would say that, honestly, but he's the highest paid employee of the federal government and controls tens of billions of dollars in research funding. Fauci is the embodiment of every reason we lost the country. Let me prove it to you. He has failed upward his entire life. He's never done anything meaningful or successful. No one voted for Fauci. I want you to think about that. It is against everything the framers put into our system. Fauci did not collect signatures. He didn't go knock on doors. He doesn't have to show up to Lincoln Reagan Day dinners and give you an update from DC. No, he's unelected, unaccountable, and was largely unknown until the Fauci virus actually came. And because it's his virus, because of the funding behind it. And so when you are able to start to make arguments and prove to other people, that's when things can actually start to change. And so as we think more broadly here, and I have a couple other thoughts, and here's the really good news of what's happening, is that the conservative movement that I grew up in was a very fragile movement. It was a movement that was afraid to offend other people. It was a movement that was afraid to be called racist all the time. Now, I always have to say this, because I'm sure some intern at the Denver Post is here trying to write an article about me. Hi, how you doing? Good to see you. Worthless rag. And so if you are a racist here tonight, please go find help. There's a pastor that can find you the hope and the salvation in Jesus Christ. It is a sin, and you need to take it seriously. I say that non-sarcastically. But we have a supply and demand issue with racism in our country. We have such a low supply of racist incidents and racism that a failed B-rate actor named Jussie Smollett has to fake hate crimes to try to prove to us how racist we actually are. We have such a low supply of racists in America, as was said earlier, that the Democrat operatives in Virginia have to go show up with tiki torches to go pretend to be racist to try to prove a point of how racist we actually are. And so I think we're starting to see a new conservative movement that is starting to say, you can call me whatever you want. You can throw names at me. You can not invite me to your social circle or whatever. Like, I'm on a mission and we're going to take back the country. And your insults and your pejoratives and your mockery and your ridicule, it might have worked when it was the Mitt Romney, John McCain party, but it's not going to work anymore. We're here to take the country back. Is that all you got? And that's the new conservative movement. And so it's a state of affairs where we're looking at it. Now, there's a great term in social psychology, which is anti-fragile. It's written by a book by the guy Nassim Taleb. It's a phenomenal book, where if you were to think, what is the opposite of what is fragile? You'd say durable or tough. The opposite, though, is a term coined by a guy by name Nassim Taleb, where he said, what do you call an organization or a movement that gets stronger the more stress and attack you actually throw at it? What do you call a movement that the more you actually try to destroy it, the stronger it gets? And they say some churches, not the woke churches. We could talk about that later. But that term would be anti-fragile. Now, what's an example of an anti-fragile organization? The British people under Winston Churchill's leadership when the Nazis were bombing London. That made them stronger. They lost thousands of people. They lost thousands of buildings. But the more they actually bombed their hometown, the more it strengthened their resolve. Now, here's the good news I have to share with you tonight. That something happened after the Biden regime got implemented, not elected. Let me be very clear with that. Implemented, not elected. Okay? Something happened. That we as conservatives rejected the thing that we're so good at. One of the few things we're good at. We rejected self-pity. We are the most incredibly talented self-pity parade people I've ever seen. We write books about it. We have TV shows dedicated towards it. We have entire organizations that all they do is publish papers about how awful things are. We don't control Harvard, the FBI, Twitter, Google, Facebook, any of academia, the civil service or bureaucracies. What's the point? Everything's over. You know, let's just have a nice time. And instead, what happened, and miraculously, and I think largely thanks to the leadership of Donald Trump and his legacy of fighting and saying that we can turn things around, is that after January and Biden getting implemented, all of a sudden we saw a movement that activated in a way that grew stronger the more that they tried to attack us. You understand, and this is a very important point. I believe the current ruling class and the current Democrat and Republican ruling class, you get that? They are getting demoralized. I think that they're frustrated, and here's why. They thought that they could intimidate you, call you domestic terrorists, that they could spy on you like they did with Tucker Carlson, and that we would get afraid. They thought they'd say, okay, enough. They thought around May, we'd say, all right, you know what? Let's have Liz Cheney run our party, right? Let's just do that. Which, by the way, what an awful excuse for a representative, Liz Cheney. Can I just say that? It was unbelievable. Oh my goodness. What, just absolutely disgusting. It really is. And you want to talk about lying to your voters? She represents Wyoming. When was the last time she was actually in Wyoming? You guys ever been to, I mean, you guys have obviously been to Wyoming a lot. And that's just that's another example of betraying your voters, right? I mean, she's totally intentional to try and do something that's totally against the voters of Wyoming. But no, actually, we wanted something different. Actually, we wanted results. And we knew at our core, because we have prudence and common sense, unlike so many of our leaders, that if we don't do something, this thing's going to fall apart. And what happened in the last 9 months, I want to compliment all of you. I want to encourage all of you, is nothing short of inexplicable. Because Zuckerberg and Bezos and Pelosi and Schumer, they thought they could carpet bomb you into submission and you would stop showing up. But instead, city councils were taken over. Instead, we have a Republican mayor in McAllen, Texas, which is the first Republican to be elected since 1926. Instead, we are seeing a massive reaction. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction in a way that is profound. And it's something that is going to all of a sudden give the playbook for how we are going to take back this country. And so that is an anti-fragile movement. That's an anti-fragile movement that the more they attack us, the more that they come after us, the stronger we actually become. Because here's where it is, everybody. There's only two ways this ends up. We win or they win. There is no middle ground. It's that simple. But they're afraid of common everyday Americans rising up and taking back positions in local government, taking back positions in school board, taking back positions in city council races. So let me close with this. I'm going to do a pastor's close. It'll be like three closing in one, right? So people ask all the time, they say, Charlie, what can we do? What can we do to actually get engaged and get involved? Charlie, I watch Tucker Carlson every night. I bought the pillow. I've done everything I've been told to do, right? By the way, promo code Kirk at mypillow.com, okay? And the Giza Dream Sheets are unbelievable, and the slippers, heavenly. You know, right? I want to do more, Charlie. What can I do? Here's some marching orders for you tonight. Number one, reject cynicism every day. If people around you are cynical, say, snap out of it. If I wanted someone to complain, I would call someone from the United Kingdom. If I wanted someone to sit around and drink wine, I'd call an Italian. If I wanted someone to retreat, I'd call someone from France. I want to win, and that's what Americans do. Stop complaining. I always lose at least two people that are like, I'm Monday de France. They're like swearing on the way up. It's like in Seattle or something. It was really aggressive. Like, I'm kidding. All right, I got plenty more French jokes. I won't share them with you tonight. But that's, we're not complainers as a people. I mean, give me a break. We as Americans are problem solvers. We do impossible things. We still have a great country. I know it's falling apart. I know it's not what it used to be. I know we're controlled by a small, unelected group of people that hate us and hate our values. Okay, we still have the truth and we have the people. We have energy. And as long as I have breath in my lungs, you have to be optimistic. And things are starting to change. They're starting to turn. And so that's number one. Anywhere in your orbit, the energy of cynicism, reject it. Like, I don't have time for this. This negativity is not going to be there. You can be honest. You can lay out things that happen. And every conversation on politics with your friends with solutions and action. That's my call to action for you. One of them tonight. Do not do the pity party dinners where you talk about everything that's going in the wrong direction. That's not who we are. Okay. That is a defeatist mindset. They want you to believe that, by the way. They want you to act as if it's over. They want you to try to surrender. Number two, every person here tonight, you have to be the same person in public that you are in private. Be the same person in public that you are in private. Now, this is hard because some people say, Charlie, I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to be kicked out of my fraternity or my sorority. I'm going to be all these different things. You're right. You're not going to take back the country and not have to lose something in the process. And I just want to say this. The people that have had 30 to 40 year careers that are now walking away from a well-paying job because they don't want to take a vaccine, you are heroes in my book. I want to say that is courage. That is courage. And it is wrong that we are putting them through it. But I'll be honest, I have hope when I see that. That's sacrifice. When you have people that are working for United Airlines and they say, you know what? I earn $200,000 a year. I've been with this company for 35 years. I've never missed a day of work. Now they're making me get a vaccine for a virus I've already had. And now I'm walking away. I say, that inspires me. Like, you're the courageous one. Like, that's all of a sudden you're putting your income, your net worth. And by the way, it's regardless of your position on the vaccine. It's completely irrelevant. But that's all of a sudden saying, I'm willing to sacrifice for something that is beyond me. And we need more of that. And we need more people that are willing to all of a sudden put their own personal satisfaction, you know, aside and be willing to have kind of a broader and bigger picture to try to shoot for. So the third thing that we have to do, which you're already doing, and I was talking to my good friend Heidi earlier about this, who I know is running for governor. I know I'm not supposed to endorse anyone, so here's all I'm going to say. Heidi's a wonderful friend, and she's a phenomenal person, and this is me not endorsing anybody, okay? That's all I'm going to say. So I didn't endorse anybody, okay? So I've known Heidi for years. We've done a lot of things together. And she actually spoke at our Turning Point events a couple years ago. We were talking about this before, which is that we need to all of a sudden go from the exact opposite of how we viewed politics, which is from the bottom up, not from the top down, right? Which is that everything you need to focus on buildings you drive by every single day. Think about that. Focus on the school boards. Focus on the city councils. I know this has been a repeating theme of my speech, but I repetition is the soul of memory, everybody, which is that if you really want to start to make that substantive change, you guys have elections coming up Tuesday, which are going to matter a lot for that. And, you know, in the final push, you guys can make a difference for that. Please do that. And the final thing I'll say with this, which is the fourth thing that people say, Charlie, what can I do? What can I do? I feel like I'm losing my country. What can I do? Well, consider if you really want to go all in, make your business politics. And that's a tough thing. You're like, well, I don't want to do that. Okay, well, then there's a limit, right? Which, like, look at our team at Turning Point USA. We travel 330 days a year, right? We're speaking all the time. We get all the most wonderful death threats you can imagine. I'm not complaining, by the way, because I am the happiest person in the world because I know I get to wake up every single day and make a difference in my country and not have to be a spectator, right? And so, so here's my challenge for you, which is regardless of where you sit in your living room or the type of drink that you sip when you watch the Denver Broncos, it has no bearing on the impact of the game. It's all karmic. Instead, in politics, it does make a difference what you do. Is that in sports, we view politics and sports as the same thing. We say, oh, well, you know, this is kind of watching on TV. I open, I'll buy the jersey, pillow, whatever, right? And that's it. No, this is different. Like, you can register voters. You can knock on doors. You can run for office. You can host events. And you can actually do meaningful things. It's totally different than a sports team. And you're like, no, Charlie, you don't understand. When we won the Super Bowl, it was my cheering in you know, right at the end zone that got it done. You're right. It was probably your vocal cords that got the Denver Broncos, you know, their Super Bowl. Let's stop fooling ourselves, okay? In politics, it's more than just cheering from the sidelines, which goes to the thing that bothers me the most when people ask me, hey, Charlie, how's it going out there? And I looked at them, I was like, what am I, like a running back for the Arizona Cardinals or something? I say, how's it going with you out there? Oh, I don't do this stuff. I just kind of watch. Like, no more spectator conservatism, anybody, everybody. It's the man in the arena that counts. The man in the arena that counts. So let me close with this. Two other thoughts. Colorado's winnable. I want to say that again. Colorado can turn. Colorado is winnable. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take work. But the cynics in Virginia all of a sudden are like, oh yeah, we believe this the entire time. And those of you that are holding the foundation together, this state is way more conservative than is reflected in a lot of the Democrat trends that happen in statewide elections. It's just the way it is. Is that I will be far from calling your statewide officials moderates, but my goodness, your Democrats elected as statewide officials here in Colorado, in comparison, are moderates compared to some of the other Democrats like J.B. Pritzker or Gavin Newsom or I guess Andrew Cuomo is no longer a governor. That's actually a really nice thing to think about. And so what we're doing on the campuses, what you guys are doing out there is going to make a major difference. And it's going to take a coalition. It's going to take a bottom-up movement. It's going to take all of us together. And so here's what I want you to try to see that success is going to look like. New York Times headline in 2040. Sudden and shocking right turn in our country attributable to citizen uprising post-COVID-19 pandemic. That's the success that we need to have, is that we need to say success 20 years down the road is all of a sudden this was the beginning. Someone says, Charlie, do you think we're going to win? I say, you know what? First of all, that's another question I can't stand. Let me tell you why I can't stand this question. Number one, do you think we're going to win? There's no good answer. There's no way I can answer that question. Let me tell you why. If I say, you know what? Yeah, I think we're going to win. You know what you go do? You go home and you're like, I don't have to do anything because Charlie says we're going to win. And if I say, no, I think we're going to lose, you go home and you're like, yeah, I'm not going to do anything because Charlie said we're going to lose. So there's no good way I can answer that question. Instead, I'll say, it depends on you. It depends on what you're going to do. I don't know. It's an open-ended question. I think we have truth. I think we have better ideas, better arguments. I think that we have momentum, force equals mass times acceleration, but it's going to take action. And so the crucible, the moment that we're at right now in American history is one where the citizen needs to reassert itself. And this will be the final thing I say, which is an awakening is necessary for us to win. The greatest man to live in the 20th century was Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill wrote 50 books. He was the most incredible leader in a time when the entire country was not prepared for war. He was willing to bring them up against existential evil. There was only one man that was smiling on the morning of December 7th, 1941, and that was Winston Churchill. When Winston Churchill walked in the Pearl Harbor, he walked into the war cabinet meeting with a cigar and a thing of whiskey and a smile a mile wide. His war cabinet was sullen, downtrodden, with low morale. At 7 o'clock in the morning, he walks in and he says, "We have won the war." And his war cabinet looks around. They say, "What do you mean we've won the war?" And he says it again, "We have won the war." And his one brave soul in the war cabinet challenged the prime minister. And he says, "What do you mean we've won the war? Have you lost your mind? We barely got our troops out of Dunkirk. They are taking over 30 Royal Air Force airplanes out of the sky every day. They just bombed a hospital in North London. And our intelligence reports show that they are planning a ground invasion on Brighton. And we are alone on our island more than ever before. What do you mean we've won the war?" And a silence unlike anything before hit the war cabinet room. And Churchill took a puff of his cigar and another sip of whiskey. He says, "Ah, you see, I have fought and bled alongside the Americans. They're a tricky people. But I tell you this, once they have awoken, it is over. And I tell you tonight, everybody, once we wake up, we will win." God bless you guys. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.